Well, good morning and welcome to another broadcast of Mornings for the Master. We're certainly tickled that you are here alongside with us, here on the radio, the Gospel Radio Network. We're reaching around the world today, and so we're thankful for the opportunity to use the internet for good. There's so many people out there that use the internet for evil, for bad, and so to be able to use something like this for good is a real pleasure. And so we're glad that you are assisting us in that, and hope that you would take opportunity today to tell somebody about the Gospel Radio Network. Help us to get that word out. Maybe send some of that Facebook stuff out there. I'm going to start Facebook in one of these days. I don't know when that's going to be, but we're working on that, trying to get out there and learn how to use that social media. Anyway, glad that you're here with us. See that my wife is here in the window with us this morning. We've got the chat window up. And certainly, if you're listening out there this morning, take a moment. Even if you can't join in the chat all throughout the program, at least chime in and say hello and tell us that you're out there. And so glad that my wife is with us this morning. Glad you're listening as you work so diligently there at the house. We want to throw this out before I forget it, because I am a forgetful individual. You know, I bought some ginkgo biloba a while back to help me with my memory. Yeah, that's supposed to be a good thing to help you with your memory. But I can't remember to take it. But anyway, we're glad to have you with us this morning. And I want to make this one mention before I forget. Stepfather, I guess it is, to one of our good overseers here, David Morgan, is not doing very well health-wise this morning. He's in Tyler, and his good wife, Ann, who is always on the air with us, is by his side at the hospital room. Spoke to Chris recently, and he said that he's just not doing that good. And at 90 years old, you know, he's had a full life. He's done a lot of things, been a lot of places, showed a lot of love. And Chris had asked that we certainly remember him in our prayers, even today. And certainly Miss Ann, as she sits by his side and certainly travails over the situation at hand. So Miss Ann's not with us in the window today, to my knowledge. But nevertheless, she is doing something incredibly important, sitting with her husband today. And so I didn't want to forget that. Remember Ann and David Morgan in your prayers today. Remember those things that are going on around us. I just have the one announcement in front of me, but I know that things are getting wound up now that the summer's here. I know we've got a pretty big crew, to my understanding, that's still working diligently out at Camp Ida on a daily basis. They're painting, they're raking, they're cleaning, they're doing all kinds of things, getting ready for the very first session, which I think, I don't see a calendar. See, I think it's, where's my calendar? I think it starts on June the 3rd or the 4th. I mean, it's just coming up. It's right here at hand. That would be the 4th, I guess. So we're right at it. Our week is going to be starting on the 18th, and so that'll be third session. There's five sessions. Now, if you still haven't got your children enrolled in that, then, you know, please get in touch with our secretary here. She's doing all the filing and can help you with that. You can call her here at the office if you need to. That's 903-537-4129. You could get in touch with her and let her know your kids are coming. We can get those registration forms offline and fill them out and get them sent in with your check right away. But do those things as quickly as you can, because I know that the day is approaching pretty quick. Here it is, the end of May. Can you believe that? We're going to be talking about Christmas here before long. Okay, anyway. Here we go. Where am I? Here, Emory. I lost my finger here. Down at Emory, John Ratliff is finishing up a meeting tonight. This week he has been down there preaching The gospel as it relates to reviving our passion. And so the Emory Church has had the opportunity to hear John preach on a number of amazing lessons, reviving our passion, the glory and joy of God, reviving our passion for God in prayer, and reviving a passion for God in worship. And so that'll be tonight down at the Emory congregation. So he'll be wrapping up and heading on back to Prescott, Arkansas. And certainly John is a passionate gentleman, and he does a great job in the pulpit. So if you're out and about this evening, able to go down to Emory, then that would be a great opportunity for you. Here in Mount Vernon, we're having a great night of singing. And so we'll have the opportunity to gather together as the ecclesia and sing praises to God. So we look forward to that. If you happen to be stuck at home tonight for one reason or another and would like to join in on that, then we'll meet you right back here at 7 o'clock tonight, and we'll sing together. Let's see. Coming out of Jody wants us to remember, don't forget Father's Day is coming up. Yeah, Father's Day is right around the corner. I guess that's the weekend of the 18th. So make sure and get those Omaha Steaks packages out there. You know, Dad's going to love those. I'm just kidding. Just remember Father's Day is out there and not very far away. This morning, the task in front of us is to talk about the great swelling meanings that are found in Psalm 18 and Psalm 19. Psalm 18, 2 is one of my, kind of favorite sermons, I guess. I love the fullness and the impact that Psalm 18 and verse 2 makes. I have the opportunity in this one particular sermon to go through and break down each one of these designations, rock, fortress, deliver, rock, you know, and talk about each one of those meanings and then sum it up and show the psalmist's love of God. So it was interesting for me to kind of cross over that passage yesterday in preparation and remember those thoughts. And maybe we can incorporate some of that today. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But Psalm 18 and 19 are two precious passages indeed. Psalm 18, as you see looking in front of you there, has 50 verses. So we'll need to giddy up and go, as it were. But Psalm 19, how many times have we heard that preached? You know, Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Boom, that's Romans 1 and verse number 20 right there, right? Anyway, let's get started, and we'll just kind of read through this and do the best we can as we have the opportunity to go through it. The title of this one, if you've got one of those study Bibles like I do, it says, To the Chief Musician, a Psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. Did you know that that's verse number 1 in 2 Samuel 22? As a matter of fact, this psalm is nearly word for word of what you find in 2 Samuel 22. 2 Samuel 22 has 51 verses, and so it's just a shade different in that particular aspect. Or maybe you should say 2 Samuel 22 is almost verbatim what you find in Psalm 18. Either way, as you look through your column reference there, as you have a chance to study, I bet over and over, as I see in mine, there's some 2 Samuel 22 mentions over and again. And that's because it's almost verbatim what's found here. So as you begin, verse number 1, he says, I love thee, O Jehovah, my strength. Oh, that'd be a good way to start a prayer. That'd be a good way to start a song. That'd be a good way to start your mornings for the master. You know, the very first words off your lips in the morning, what are they? Where's the coffee? Maybe. What better words to come right off your tongue first thing in the morning than, I will love thee. I think the King James says, I will love thee. The American Standard here says, I love thee. That's emphatic. Oh, Jehovah, my strength. And so as you think about the title, even that verse 1 from 2 Samuel 22, I don't know what it's like to run, you know, from a king. The things that David is experiencing, running from a man that's trying to murder him, and then seeing the deliverance of God, you know, daily, as you are given your sustenance for the day. In the wilderness, you know, you have the meat that you're able to kill, the way that you're able to be provided for by God. The opportunities in 1 Samuel 24 and 1 Samuel 26, as he has the opportunity to slay the king and doesn't. How do you get your head around that? I've never been in that position. And so when he says, from his standpoint, from his vantage points, I love thee, O Jehovah, my strength, we can try our very best to understand it. But to wrap your head around that moment in time where he was, it is far more emphatic than what I can imagine from my own perspective. Now, I love him because of the things that he's done for me. The giving of his son, Jesus Christ, Romans 5, verses 8 and 9, making him to be the author of our salvation, as you read over in Hebrews. There's so many things that I can say I love him because. And so, when I look at what David's writing here, when he says, I love thee, you know, there's motive. There's reason. There's a lot that goes into that impactful statement. I love thee, O Jehovah. Well, thou art my strength. That's Philippians, right? I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. He is our strength. And so here's David hiding, as it were, on a daily basis, running for his life from the king of Israel because he's innocent. Yeah, that, you know, again, just can't seem to get my head around that. But he says, I love thee. Thou art my strength. And so his daily living process is because God loves him. He says in verse number 2, Jehovah is my rock, my fortress. And he goes through these wonderful descriptions. He's my fortress. He's my deliverer. He's my God in whom I will take refuge, my shield, the horn of my salvation, my high tower. That's a packed full statement. To go through each one of those and talk about the power of God. He is my rock. Well, that's the greatest foundation you can build on, right? Isn't that what Jesus said in the latter part of Matthew 7? The man that built his house upon the rock, he was the wise man. He was the successful man. Well, David obviously has built his life. His foundation is built upon God. And so he is my rock. He's my fortress, right? What do you think about with a fortress? He's his safe place. God provides refuge. You know, even here, you know, you think about the rocky, you know, the area of Judea where he's probably hiding. There's a lot of geography, a lot of topography you could look at and discuss. But the crevices of the rocks where he's hiding, the areas where he's finding shelter, you know, ultimately it's God. And so he is his fortress. He's his safe place, right? Deliverer. You know, that can go on all day long. From cover to cover, God has shown himself to be the great deliverer. We're actually talking about that, you know, right now as it relates to God being the deliverer for Israel in Exodus, as we come into Exodus 19, even this next Lord's Day. But he is my deliverer day to day as he is delivered from the murderous plot of Saul. He acknowledges God is my deliverer, right? He is my God, my strong God. Now, when you look at this particular language, You know, sometimes these things don't translate well into the English language, and you know, we get a good sense of it. But my God, the way that it's written here, my understanding of the original language is my strong God, right? Yeah, and that's what we just saw coming through, you know, the plagues in Exodus. Over and over, he profoundly states in a most public way, in a most humiliating way to these little G gods, he is the strong God. He is my strength. He is the source of all strength. He is the beginning and the end of strength. He is my strength. He is the reason that I'm able to do what I do on a daily basis, David says. And he says, I will trust him. He's the horn of my salvation. He's my high tower. You know, the horn, obviously a symbol of power. Think about the great big long horn cows. You wouldn't want to tangle with that guy. But the horn, you know, you look through even the rulers that are mentioned in Revelation, talk about the little horn, the big horn, the ten horns. You know, these are powers. These are individual leaders specifically. But it's always referred to power. He is the power, then, of my salvation, right? He's my buckler. He's my shield. You know, I remember, seemed like it was the movie 300 or... I think that's the movie it was. But anyway, all the soldiers, when they had the opportunity to see those arrows coming at them, they would all squat and put their shoulders above them, and it made like a roof. No darts of the enemy were going to penetrate, and that's exactly what we see here. God will keep the fiery darts from you. And that's exactly what Paul writes about in Ephesians 6. I believe it's verses 16 and 17 there. He's my shield of faith. You know, you got to put that on. You got to have that with you. He is my helmet of salvation. You got to put that on. And so a lot goes into that. Now, I'm telling you, you can preach verse 2 all day long. Verse 3, I will call upon Jehovah, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. That's the song that we sing at camp. It's a beautiful song. And the answer to that, it's found here in the latter part of the chapter. And so this is a song, I will call upon the Lord, right? Who else could we call upon? You know, David is in flight, running from Saul. You can't call on Saul. You know, you can't call on the king of the land. Who else can you call on? Well, he says very confidently, I will call upon the Lord. He can deliver me from my enemies. I find comfort in his rod and his staff. Psalm 23. In verse number 4, he says, the cords of death compassed me, and the floods of ungodliness made me afraid. I thought about those cords of death. That's really being in the throes of death. I mean, you know, death is imminent. But, you know, what is it that, if you've ever watched an internment, maybe even a country internment. They don't so much do it now, I guess, but how do they lower the casket into the grave? But with cords, or ropes, as you might say, underneath the casket, and four men letting, you know, that casket down into the ground. I was literally in the cords of death, he says. You know, I was in the throes of Sheol, verse number 5, the grave. Death was right there knocking at my door. So these sorrows right here were at my door. I was near death on several occasions. But guess what? God's in control, and God is going to take care of me. Verses 6 and 7, in my distress, I called upon Jehovah, and I cried out unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple, and my cry before him came into his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations also of the mountains quaked and were shaken because he was wroth. A lot of figurative language being spoken here. The power of God and the way he answers prayers and the way he hears us and listens to us. When God speaks, people listen. And he has spoken, and we have it in our word here, and we are to be listening as well. You know, when when you hear him make these wonderful statements, like in verse 8, there went up a smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth devoured, coals were kindled by. You know, that's language that causes me to think of real life situations, such as, what was it, Genesis 19? You go back to Genesis 7, the flood. Right? When God speaks, people listen. Remember him up on Mount Sinai, which we're getting to quickly in our adult class here. The thunderings, the noise. You remember the great cloud that came down back in Exodus 14 and separated the Egyptian army from the Israelites at the Red Sea. You know, God's presence can be felt, can be seen, can be heard. And we feel him in our lives every day. Now, that's not this swelling, you know, thing that comes out of us and we speak in tongues and all this kind of stuff. That's just heartburn working within you. When we have God working in our lives, we feel it. We know it to be true. We hear it. We feel it. And so here we're seeing that expression even by David is how, of how God was working in his life, how he was defending him, how he was working daily for him and with him and alongside of him. Verse 9, he bowed the heavens also and came down. And thick darkness was under his feet, and he rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he soared upon the wings of the wind. You know, David is a amazing writer. You would see that in Solomon. They have this ability to put words to paper. Certainly inspiration is involved. But notice the swelling admiration of God and what he has done and what he has accomplished and how they're not afraid to hold that back. You know, you've seen the bumper sticker on some of these old pickup trucks that real men love Jesus. That's the idea of not being ashamed to say, I love God. I love his son and I would do anything for him. And we see that over and again in David. You know, real men love Jesus. We have this idea here that's being expressed about God riding in his chariot. And that's throughout all of the wars that he's been involved in. God is the leader of his army. The host of heaven fights for the righteous on a regular basis. Is still fighting for us today, according to what the Revelation says. You know, the Revelation says that the battle's been won, and all we have to do is hold fast. Because the host is there to fight for us. And so, you know, this wonderful fighting power of God is being explained here. He made darkness his hiding place, his pavilion round about him, darkness of waters, thick clouds of the skies. Again, since we're right here in Exodus in our class, I thought back to the Red Sea again. You know, God is light and in him is no darkness at all. How could he be that dark cloud? Well, that's his work. You know, he creates the dark clouds the way he makes the white clouds. And he uses these things to the furtherment of his will. Well, so when we see this darkness, it's not saying God is darkness, but this is God's power working before you. Darkness was his hiding place. Where is God? Well, he is above and beyond. He is in the great unknown out there, the place that we are headed to, John 14, remember? That place has been prepared. And so we have this wonderful expression being given here, the same that causes me to think back, as I said, to Exodus chapter 14. Verse number 12, the brightness before him, his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. This is a process of the storm cloud, isn't it? The darkness, right? And then the great light, that's the thunderings and the lightnings that come down, then followed many times by hailstones, these coals of fire. This is the wrath of God being poured out upon the unrighteous, upon those that would kick against the pricks, as Saul of Tarsus was told. He sent his arrows and scattered them, verse 14. Yea, lightnings manifold and discomfited them. Over and again, we see this description that David is giving about God fighting even against those that would stand against him. You remember, again, back in Exodus, I mean, I continue to go back there. Was it chapter 17 where Moses's hands were held up by Aaron and Hur? God fought all day long. And so God will fight for his chosen. God will continue to fight. So these wonderful things that we're seeing in front of us, these expressions of God's working power, is put in such a magnificent form, even by the writer here, that caused us to just sit with our mouths open and wonder. He sent from on high. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. Verse number 16, maybe even the idea, excuse me, even the idea of many waters being many manifold forces of evil. You know, water, when the water comes raging through your town in a flood, it destroys everything in its path. Well, many of these forces that were marching through the land, you know, Saul's great host that was looking for David, what does it say here? He was pulled from them. God took me from them. He drew me out of many waters, right? And so he has saved me. Looking back to the powerful verse number 2, he delivered me from my strong enemy, verse 17, Saul, and from them that hated me, for they were too mighty for me, right? The overwhelming power. You know, this is something that should have been learned back in Numbers 13 when they said, we'll never be able to take the Anakims, those giants over there. Well, they didn't quite understand what it is that David understands. Now, Joshua and Caleb, they understood, obviously, going back to that reference. They said that we can do this. But David understands the power of God, and he sees it working in his life on a daily basis. He says, God has delivered me. He has drawn me out of many waters. Verse 18, they came upon me in the day of my calamity. But Jehovah was my stay. And so as long as you are on the Lord's side, great blessings are going to follow. He is always going to be working for you and with you. Verse 19, he brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighteth in me. God looks favorably upon the righteous, right? Jehovah hath rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands. He hath recompensed me, for I have kept the ways of Jehovah and have not wickedly departed from my God. And so those things that he's talking about there, he says, I have followed the commandments. You know, what did Jesus say in John 15:14? If you want to be my friends, then you'll do whatsoever I command you, right? If you love me, keep my commandments. And so David is saying, I love thee, and I have kept thy commandments. I am innocent in what I've done, or what Saul says that I have done. God knows that. David knows that God knows that. David is confident in the fact that he has done that which God has asked him to do. And so that confidence can be ours as well, knowing that we are doing those things that God expects us to do, and then knowing that we have a reward waiting on us. And so when you keep going through here, notice that there is a confidence that goes along with the righteousness that he has even while he's on the run. He says, I'm running really for no reason. And because I'm innocent, because I've continued to do those things that God's asked me to do, he has continued to help me and to be with me, right? He enabled me to, you know, be where I am today because I have continued to do his will. Verse number 20, Jehovah hath rewarded me. You know, we're looking for a great reward one day, aren't we? You know, we're going to be judged one day according to those things that we've done in our body, whether it be good or bad. 2 Corinthians 5, verse number 10. We're going to be judged by those things that come out of that book of life. Our names had better be there. And so when you look at Revelation 14 and verse 13, when it says, blessed are those that die in the Lord from henceforth, And guess what? It says there also that our works do follow us. David is saying, my works are righteous. He says, I know that I have done that which is God, that which God has expected me to do. He brought me forth into a large place. He has rewarded me. Beginning of verse 21, I have kept the ways of Jehovah and have not wickedly departed from my God. That's something that we should be able to confidently say every day. And if we can't, then we need to back up and punt. Let's get back to the place where we can say, I have kept the ways of Jehovah and have not wickedly departed from God. For all, verse 22, all his ordinances were before me, and I put not alway his statutes from me. I kept them on a daily basis. They were in the front of my mind. I was also perfect with him, verse 23, and I kept myself from mine iniquity. He had control over his body. That's 1 Corinthians 6. Don't let anything else have control over you, but you take control of yourself. Therefore hath Jehovah recompensed me according to my righteousness, verse 24. According to the cleanness of my hands in his eyesight, not the appearance of my cleanliness in my sight. You know, my standard, you know, it's going to be a whole lot less than Jehovah's. But we need to be concerned about our what we look like in God's sight. And then maybe we can say the same thing that David is saying here, right? Verse 25, with the merciful, thou wilt show thyself merciful, thyself perfect. This is the way we stand before God. Even Isaiah would make that recognition so many years ago, and he would say, you know, I'm just a dirty rag before God. You know, I'm completely undone. Now, Isaiah was a pretty good guy, you know, but even someone in his state, in the work that he would do, in his humbleness, would say, I'm completely undone. We need to recognize where we are in front of God. With the pure, thou wilt show thyself pure. With the perverse, thou wilt show thyself froward. One of those King James words, the perverse man, he that is crooked, you know, crooked in his temper, crooked in his manner of life, crooked in his thinking, right? Thou wilt show thyself able to wrestle with him. Thou wilt show thyself ready to do battle, ready to contend, right? You don't want to go up against God. And Saul would find that out. Saul would catch one of those arrows in his armor before too long and would breathe his last breath. Thou wilt save the afflicted people, verse 27. But the haughty eyes thou wilt bring down. You know, case in point, the Edomites. Can you tell me where they are today? The Edomites don't exist anymore, right? The Amalekites, their iniquity was finally full one day, and King Saul was told to go and utterly destroy them. You know, these individuals, when God has had enough, then he's had enough. Case in point, Sodom, Gomorrah. Case in point, Genesis 7, the flood, right? When God says he's had enough, he's had enough. And that's the point of 2 Peter 3. There's going to be a day when he says, I've had enough. I'm ready for my son to bring the church home. And that day might very well come tonight. And we need to be able to speak like David is speaking here. Verse 29, for by thee I run upon a troop, and my God, do I leap over a wall. See what God allows us to do? Run right through the middle of the trouble, and he is going to provide a way of escape. Does that sound at least familiar to you? Well, it should, because it's 1 Corinthians 10 and verse number 13. He will supply an escape hatch. He will supply an exit for you if you'll just endure, if you'll just be faithful. You know that tribulation's coming. You know that hard times are ahead of you. You know that there's going to be a something horrible that you might have to deal with even this week. But never fear, God is there with you, and he will provide that way of escape, because as it says in that verse, God is faithful. Verse 30, As for God, his way is perfect. The word of Jehovah is tried. Even there, the idea of being tried like gold is tried, that purified. He is a shield unto all them that take refuge in him. Again, there's that reference about being able to keep yourselves free and safe as the fiery darts are hurled at you. For who is God save Jehovah? And who is a rock beside our God? Well, God, you know, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, from everlasting unto everlasting, God is God, the self-existent, most powerful one, the creator even of the universe. That's who he says, I serve. And so who is God except God? He is the Almighty Jehovah. He is the self-existent. He is the eternal one. He is the omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent one. Well, that'll wax bold all day. And so he is God. He maketh my feet like hinds feet, like the swiftness of the deer, the swiftness of the leopard, you know, as without tanks and mortars and all these things that we have today. One of the greatest benefits that you could have as a soldier is speed, being able to run from one place to another very quickly. He makes my feet like hinds feet. He setteth me upon my high places. God takes care of me. He's able to put me in a place of safety because he's with me. And so he is allowing this swiftness of my feet because he's taking care of me. He teacheth my hands to war so that mine arms do bend a bow of brass. You know, this idea of divine help, being able to, you know, how did Samson kill so many with just the jawbone of an ass? Well, it's because God was directing the fight. How could all of these 900 chariots, you know, back in Judges, how could 900 chariots just completely sink in the mud? That was a dry riverbed. Well, not when Jehovah fights. The waters come and the chariots sink. You know, over and again, you see through the Bible that God is fighting for the righteous. And so he has given me strength. He's given me speed. He's given me battle-ready exercises to use when the time comes. Thou hast also made mine enemies turn their backs unto me, that I might cut off them that hate me. That's the idea of retreat. David's here. We're not going to stand against David because God's fighting for him. Run, right? The same thing that they said in the midst of the Red Sea, the Egyptians, right? Uh-oh, God's fighting for them. When the chariot wheels started to fall off and everything started to go south, they said, run. Well, God closed the Red Sea on them. Over and again, David has experienced much the same thing in his conquests. Verse 42, then did I beat them small as the dust before the wind. I did cast them out as the mire of the streets. Thou hast delivered me from the strivings of the people. Thou hast made me the head of the nations. A people whom I have not known shall serve me. These spoils of war, these individuals that would be brought back even to use as slaves under David's reign, these people that I have not known. Now, the people that he knows, you know, the Israelites, you know, those 12 tribes that God has blessed, people he's not known, Hivites, the Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, all these individuals that you read about in the Bible, they shall serve me, right? As soon as they hear of me, they shall obey. The foreigners shall submit themselves unto me, right? They will bend. It's interesting to listen that, you know, even the beginning of Joshua's chapter 2, I guess it is, as the spies come even unto Rahab, Rahab says, I've heard about what happened in Ammon and Moab. I've heard about King Og. I've heard about your God and how he fights. And so the people in our city, they have shaky knees. They have become faint. They are scared to death. And that's the same thing that's being expressed by David here. The enemies are scared to death of the great God and what he has done even behind me, or in front of me, rather. The foreigners shall fade away and shall come trembling out of their close places. Jehovah liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalted be the God of my salvation. There's the answer that we talked about as we looked even at verse number 3. That's the answering verse of that song that we sing. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. And then here, the Lord liveth, and blessed be the rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. And the kids sing that over and over and over. How appropriate. The same thing that David is singing here as he is delivered daily from the hand of Saul. Even the God that executeth vengeance for me and subdueth peoples under me. You know, God is working for his people. He executes vengeance for me because vengeance doesn't belong to me, does it? Vengeance belongs unto the Lord and only to the Lord. And we need to leave his work alone. Verse 48, he rescues me from mine enemies. Over and again, the same thing that we've read throughout this particular passage. Yea, thou liftest me up above them that rise up against me. Thou deliverest me from the violent man. God is the great deliverer, right? Saul, maybe even in particular here, the violent man. You have delivered me, God, over and again from Saul. And again, the respect that David shows to Saul. Again, we mentioned back in 1 Samuel 24 and 26, I think it was, where he had two opportunities to kill him, but he says, it is not my place to touch God's anointed. Now, even though Saul was in the wrong, David recognized, you don't stand where God stands. You let God take care of what God needs to take care of. You just be righteous. You just do what God expects you to do. Therefore, I will give thanks, verse 49. I will give thanks to thee, Jehovah, among all nations. I will sing praises unto thy name. What a great response. Great deliverance giveth he to his king, and showeth loving kindness to his anointed, to David and to his seed forevermore. As you remember, David is to be given the throne behind Saul, and David would be blessed indeed. Now, David made some mistakes, you know, all of us do. Maybe not to the same degree that David did, but nevertheless, he would be a great king. And he would be blessed, a man after God's own heart. So chapter 18 is a swelling, just praiseworthy song of deliverance. And again, the same thing that we can read over in 2 Samuel 22. Well, with the minutes that we've got left, let's try to take a look, if you will, with me at Psalm 19, another beautiful, praiseworthy psalm. The heavens declare the glory of God, verse 1, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. You know, again, as we mentioned a little while ago at the top of the show, Romans 1 and verse number 20, all you got to do is look outside. Look what he has done for you. The beauty of his creation tells a lot about him. The fact that there is such beauty in the creation, it demands the fact that there is a creator. And so God's creation is really telling a significant truth. You know, just as you look at the watch on your arm, that thing didn't just fall out of the air. There was someone that designed it. There was someone who submitted a design, and then there was somebody who punched it out on a press, somebody who made that thing and put it together. But it began with a design. And the same way is significant with God's creation. And so look what he's done for you. Look at the beauty of the flowers, the beauty of the trees, the beauty of the blue sky today. If you're in an area where you can see what we're seeing in East Texas, this beautiful sky, the heavens declare the glory of God. You know, the area that's above you, the firmament. I don't know that firmament's really a perfect rendering of the Hebrew here, But actually, it's the wide open spaces. So the heavens, they declare the glory of God. Says a story without speaking a word. And so we should be able to look up and just be thankful for what we see. Day unto day, verse 2, uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. You know, if a guy's going to listen, then God's creation of the heavens and the earth, God's creation of the wide open spaces, they tell a story. And really, this knowledge that you can obtain about God even as the writer here is telling us, can be obtained just by looking. Now, as it relates to, you know, weightier things like salvation, those things have to be observed, read in God's Word. You're not going to find out how to be saved from the beautiful oak tree in your backyard, obviously. But the wonderful stories, the wonderful truths that are told about God in His creation are magnificent. We find out about His power. One of the things that we're going to be talking about in our VBS this year, the power of God, simply to call things into existence. Let there be light. And there was light. God's amazing power. Look outside and see it. His perfect knowledge. Man, think about the Garden of Eden. What a perfect place that He made. You know, He thinks highly of us. Another thing that you can look outside and understand is His love. You know, He made us a perfect dwelling place. You know, just Richard's done such a wonderful job with this. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just a millimeter or something closer to the sun, we'd burn up. And just, you know, a little bit in the other direction, we'd freeze to death. God has made us a perfect place to live. And it's really just a drop in the bucket because of the things that He's done for us eternally. In verse number 3, there is no speech nor language. Their voice is not heard. You see, creation screams out, God is amazing. God is glorious. God is powerful. But it's a silent scream, isn't it? You can go out and see it and be amazed. You see, God's silent teachings, they transcend all languages. I don't care if you're Japanese or if you're Chinese or if you're English. You can understand the beauty of God's creation. Their line is gone out throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath He set a tabernacle for the sun. And so when you look at this line, you know, it's the idea of construction and design. You know, when you stretch a line, it's a standard, isn't it? That's where the wall is going to go, or that's where the hole has to be dug. And so it's got everything to do with architectural design. And some of the renderings that we have in the English Bibles today, even the idea of sound is found here instead of the word line. Again, the idea that God's thunder, you know, is a powerful voice that's heard throughout all of the earth. And so either way that you look at it, it seems to be okay, the line or sound, depending on which version that you're reading this morning with us. But the earth speaks languages far beyond our comprehension of what God is able to do, what God has done. And it's interesting that when you're in Romans chapter 10, right there about verse 18, he says, as it is written. And so he makes reference even here to Psalm 19. Paul knew his Psalms. In verse number 5, which is a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Certainly seems to kind of reflect back into the discussion that we were having in verse 4 about the line, the architectural design. You know, the heavens, whew, man, people have tried to paint, have tried to render what it is to look up into the sky. The heavens really provide a wonderful backdrop for all of the magnificent sun risings, for the sun settings. God is truly amazing. As you look up today and you see the heavens and you see that sun hanging there in the sky and the beautiful clouds perhaps that you can see, notice the backdrop of all that, which is that wonderful atmosphere above you. That is the beauty of God. In verse number 6, his going forth is from the end of the heavens, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The sun is an amazing thing. You know, if you have the opportunity or have had the opportunity to study the sun, the magnificent work that it does and it continues to do, it's just a powerful testament to what God is able to do. You know, that is, you can't get too close to it. Ain't nobody walked on the sun yet. You can't even get close to it. Spaceships and those things would burn up. Everything is rotating in a wonderful path around this great ball of fire, this great ball of heat. And it just proves the magnificent power of God. And here's our opportunity to look up and see it on a daily basis and go, wow, God is so good. Well, when you get down into verses 7 through 14, these last verses that we have together this morning, it's really kind of transitions now into this praise, this song that could be sung. Here's the world and the wonderful goings forth of the great Jehovah. Look what he's done for us. Look what he has created for us. You can see so much in the creation, and now he spends a few moments in praising God for it. And so in verse number seven, he says, the law of Jehovah is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of Jehovah is sure, making wise the simple. Whew. And so he goes into this whole Psalm 19 type atmosphere now, because in Psalm 19, the longest chapter in the Bible, is all about the Bible, all about God's words. And so he says, all throughout this particular praise, he says, God's word is perfect, sure, verse 7, right, pure, enlightening, verse 8, clean, enduring, true, righteous, verse number 9. And then because of all these wonderful qualities that you find in these particular verses, he says it becomes then, verse 8, a source of joy. Verse 10, it becomes desirable. It becomes sweet. And even down in verse number 11, it becomes rewarding. And so here's this praise that is being offered up to God because of the wonderful word. So the wonderful earth that he has created, the wonderful place that he has created for us to dwell, and then the perfect word that he has given us that even helps us to enjoy this place a little bit better, because there's something far better that waits for us on the other side. So in verse number 7, he calls God's word perfect and even says it can restore my soul, making wise the simple. You know, I've heard that the Bible was written on a 7th or 8th grade reading level. I don't know how deeply true that is, but aren't you glad? There are some things that I have read on this side of eternity. I don't even know how the people wrote them, far beyond my reading comprehension. But when it comes to God's word, he wants you to know how to get to heaven. And he put it down low enough to where we could all get it, right? Even though he's got the capability to make it undiscernible, he made it so that you and I can understand it. That's what Paul said in his Ephesians letter. You can understand what I have read, what I've written. Well, I'm running out of time here. I've got just a moment or two left, but let's at least read this together. The precepts of Jehovah are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of Jehovah is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Jehovah is clean, enduring forever. The ordinances of Jehovah are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the droppings of the honeycomb. Whew, boy, it doesn't get much better than that. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Heaven waits for you. Verse 12, who can discern his errors? Clear thou me from hidden fault. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be clear from great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Jehovah, my rock and my redeemer. And what a way to go out this morning on Mornings for the Master. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. God is my rock, and God is my redeemer. Let that sink in for a little while, brethren. Meditate on that throughout the day, and enjoy the day that the Lord has made for you in this wonderful place we call earth. Looking forward to that wonderful place that he calls heaven. Appreciate each one of you being here today for Psalm 18 and 19. And pray the Lord's richest blessings upon you today. Remember to pray for David and Ann Morgan today as they sit alone together in a hospital room in Tyler. Love you guys. Talk to you later.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.